Welcome to the Morrissey and Wine podcast, where we're going to talk about everything from the world of Morrissey and get a little bit drunk on medium-priced wine. This week's bottle is Casiera del Diablo, a Sauvignon Blanc, which I always think tastes a little bit like feet. I don't know why, and I don't know if that's just me. Our theme music comes courtesy of Fiona Lee Jones on YouTube. It's obviously a piano cover of Oscillate Wildly. She's a brilliant musician. She's got loads of covers on her YouTube channel, and I would really recommend that you check her out.
Coming up, we've got Nanny Vell Reacts, where Georgia's beautiful grandma will give us her take on a Morrissey song. No expense spared there on the guests. We'll discuss the meaning of some of Morrissey's lyrics, and we'll interview the founder of Mars Army Meats in Manchester, Julie Hamill, and she's got some big news for us.
Yeah, genuinely big news, and it's exclusive to our podcast, so stay tuned for that. I should probably introduce myself. My name's George. I am a local newspaper journalist based in Derby in the East Midlands of England. I'm 30 now. I first fell in love with the Smiths and Morrissey when I was a teenager. At the time, I had this big black backcombed hairsprayed hair in a homage to Robert Smith. And my friend's mum spotted me and thought he would love the Smiths. So she gave me a copy of Louder Than Bombs. When I opened it, I sort of fell in love with this orange-tinged picture of who I would later learn was Sheila Delaney. And I remember in particular, Back to the Old House, Morrissey's sort of rolling, soft voice, and the lyrics, which kind of matched my life and seemed to be telling my secrets. The rest is history, I suppose. In the more modern age, I've seen Morrissey, I think, around a dozen times, but my co-host Chris has definitely seen it more.
I'm Chris, a 20-something, also from Derby, but I escaped to Manchester about 8 years ago. My first show was Nottingham, 2015, and I've been queuing up in the pouring rain ever since. I've been lucky enough to see Morrissey in places such as Barcelona, Tel Aviv, San Francisco, and even Doncaster.
I mean, there is quite a contrast between Doncaster and Barcelona. Barcelona, I think, for both of us, probably one of our top gigs.
Absolutely.
That was the Razzmatazz nightclub. Tiny venue.
Very tiny venue, very intimate.
Yeah, and we did queue up. I don't usually queue. Chris nearly always queues. But that time we both queued. We were both at the front. Before we went in, there were these rough sleepers selling little cans of Estrella for €1 each. So we got a bit drunk in the queue. Then I really needed a wee, but I was right at the front.
We weren't going to lose our spots.
Absolutely not.
No.
So I stuck it out. I needed a wee for the whole gig. I didn't pee on anyone, thank God. And it was a fantastic gig. So the biggest news from the world of Morrissey over the last few weeks has been the cancellation of the California gigs and I believe the South America gigs. So this was big news in the Morrissey world. Me and you, Chris, we both had quite a few friends who had flown out to California to see the You Are the Quarry celebration gigs. We heard via the venues that the two gigs in California were cancelled. It was a very short statement, which had been written by the venue, I think, not by the Morrissey team. And the fans, you know, unusually for Morrissey fans, they were really annoyed. And I think what made it even more annoying and upsetting was that Morrissey hadn't said anything. So as a fanzine, as a Morrissey Mercury fanzine, we actually put out an open letter saying it's not okay to just cancel these gigs without an explanation. And then I think that, I'm not suggesting a causal link, but I think within about 24 hours, Morrissey had, via his official channels, put out a statement saying he was suffering from physical exhaustion.
Yeah.
What did you make of that statement?
Well, I think it was welcome that we got some more information. I think a lot of people felt that way. I probably have a slightly different opinion to you that I think that we're very lucky to see Morrissey when we do see Morrissey. So I appreciate that. And I suppose also I've been quite lucky that I've not really been to any shows that have been cancelled or I've not had to do that travel because
Well, there was Nottingham.
There was Nottingham, yeah. There was Nottingham. And a couple of Manchester ones a few years ago. But it hasn't impacted me dramatically, so that might be why I feel that way.
And do you think it's acceptable for me to express this idea? And I'm conscious that by saying it, I may alienate myself from some Morrissey fans, but when I saw the statement saying Morrissey has physical exhaustion, he's under supervision, a part of me didn't 100% believe it. And I know that sounds mean, and you know what? 99% he probably does, and he was really unwell, and he couldn't do the gigs. But part of me was thinking, is it because you have a long history of cancellations and you know that you can't get away with cancelling yet another gig, you have to say something? I mean, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think like you say, I think that must be the case. But I do appreciate a bit more detail this time. So obviously people's medical situations are their own business. But it was nice to have a bit more information, because obviously a lot of people have travelled and are quite excited about those shows.
I think that this statement was put out. It's unusual for Morrissey to explain why he's cancelled. Usually he doesn't say anything, does he?
No.
In the long history of his gigs. I think there was a groundswell of anger from fans. And I think the people close to Morrissey said, you need to say something. So I'm not saying he's telling the truth or not telling the truth or whatever. But the fact that he said something is a diversion from the normal Morrissey way of doing things. And actually, I think we all appreciated it, didn't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
And we wish him the best. I think he just recently posted a video to his website, That's How People Grow Up, the music video.
Yes.
I presume he had a part in that, and that would suggest that maybe he's feeling a bit better. And I did see a tweet from someone who is on the guest list for Morrissey gigs who said that Morrissey is doing much better already.
That's wonderful news. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really good.
So the next piece of news that came out this week was the... Morrissey having a new manager.
Mm.
So that's quite exciting, especially with the possible new album. So what do you think of that?
Well, yeah, this is really good. I mean, Morrissey has had many, many managers, and he does have a reputation for being, shall we say, a little bit tricky to manage. But the thing about this situation is, for Morrissey to sign with this new manager, the new manager would have had to say, these are my plans to get you more acclaim, to get you out there more, to get you more exposure. Therefore, we can expect new things from the world of Morrissey now, because he's got this new manager, he's going to have to deliver. Unfortunately, they did misspell Morrissey's name at one point in the profile on the website, and they also misspelled the name of the photographer who took the picture.
Oh, no.
Because I know. I was thinking, oh, Morrissey looks very well. Then I realised it's from 2006, the picture. But let's not be cynical. This is a really good thing that he's got a new manager, a professional manager. I think they sell themselves as the world's biggest independent artist management company.
Yeah, yeah.
It all sounds really good to me. And
me too.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think it's got to be good news.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, we have hints that the Bonfire of Teenagers album could be coming out soon.
Yes.
So we've in the management agency profile that we just mentioned, it says Morrissey's forthcoming album, Bonfire of Teenagers.
Really exciting to see that.
Yeah.
And then also on the on Morrissey's website, there was the Breaking of the Chains picture. Is that
the
right?
The clip art
picture, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That very clearly suggested that whatever was tying the album down had been released. It also came after the chief exec of Capitol Records stepped down.
Yes.
So there's three things there that would suggest that we might be getting this album soon.
Yes.
And I think that... What are the tracks that we haven't heard live on the new album? There's Harlem... Is it Harlem Haha?
Yeah, there's Diana Dawes.
Yeah.
And then there's some that have been sort of live a couple of times, but I haven't seen them, so that'd be really exciting. Yeah, pretty exciting. Then we also had Johnny Marr on Would I Lie to You.
Oh.
This was last week's episode. There was no mention of Morrissey, which may have been contractual from Johnny Marr's part. A little reference to a Smiths, I think. But generally, Johnny Marr being Johnny Marr, so being ultra cool.
Ultra cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so just to explain, so if we have some listeners who aren't based in the UK, Would I Lie to You is what we call in the UK a panel show. I understand you don't really get panel shows in America and some other places, but it's a parlour game played by celebrities and comedians. This one is a show in which you have to read a story about yourself as if it's true, and the other contestants have to work out whether you're lying or telling the truth. So yeah, there was a bit when Lee Mack was asked what's his favourite Queen album, and he said the Queen is dead.
Yes.
So there were a couple of Smiths references, and we were talking about this earlier, and I said I'm kind of annoyed that he didn't mention Morrissey, but then we said, well, if Morrissey was on Would I Lie to You, would they ask him a Johnny Marr question?
Yeah, it's a bit different, but yeah, I think that's the case. There was also the special guest that came in, who was someone who actually saved Johnny Marr from being egged.
Yeah.
At what must have been one of his jobs before the Smiths.
Working in a co-op, stacking shells with eggs.
Yes.
He said, "I was a human omelette." Yeah, and is when he met his wife Angie, his future wife Angie, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
During that story. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think there's no question that Morrissey is the most charismatic member of the Smiths, and when compared to him, people are always going to fall short. I thought Johnny Marr did a decent job. He's obviously releasing new music at the moment, isn't he? Which is why he's on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And if anything can elevate the profile of the Smiths, like Johnny Marr being on this show, I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, our next item... It was a lovely story that I saw on the BBC. It's a DJ who goes to an old people's home and plays songs like Oasis and Pulp and The Smiths. And I just thought, what a lovely thing we could talk about. You know, the idea of going into an old people's residential home and playing, you know, Big Mouth Strikes Again. Wouldn't it be so lovely to see those older people, you know, jigging to it and dancing?
Yeah.
And we were saying, weren't we, how, you know, we... You think people of that generation, they might not know the Smiths, they might not like the Smiths, but if you were 30 or 40 when the Smiths first started and you liked them, you would be of the age to be in an old people's home by now.
Do you think there's any songs that he might not wish to play in an old people's home?
What like? I mean...
Sing Me to Sleep might be a little morbid. Yeah. Grandma in a Coma.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps not. But
Cemetery Gates.
Okay, I think you've got the answer to your own question here. Yeah, there are maybe some songs you would avoid. But don't you think that's lovely that, you know, the Smiths music can be played in that setting? It can be played at the Star and Garter. It can be played in old people's home. It can be played at a normal nightclub. Mm. And people will like it.
Absolutely. So the next one, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Taeyong, yeah. A South Korean boy band, NCT, added to a long line of people that we see who were wearing Morrissey t-shirts.
Yeah.
They were wearing a Morrissey t-shirt. Which t-shirt? Do you know which t-shirt that was? Or
Taeyong.
Yeah.
So he's from NCT, the boy band NCT.
Okay.
He was wearing, I think it's an Everyday is Like Sunday promo shop.
Okay.
Black and white. And he's looking up to sort of 11 o'clock. And he's got the big quiff. That's the one he was wearing.
Okay. So then that follows a line of, you know, Jacob Elordi, Justin Timberlake, Harry Styles... people wearing those t-shirts. What do you think the motive is for people to, I mean?
I think it's really interesting. So, of course, the obvious motive for wearing a Smiths or Morrissey t-shirt is because you like the Smiths or Morrissey. And for normal people, like me and you, that is why you would wear it. But I think in this day and age, when an Instagram picture is so forensically examined and studied and meaning is drawn from it, I think it means a bit more for someone like Jacob Elordi from Saltburn to wear a Morrissey or Smiths t-shirt. Personally, I think they're saying, I believe in free speech. I believe that outsiders should be celebrated. And also giving a sense that I have maybe an elevated music taste. You know, maybe I'm not a run-of-the-mill Ariana Grande fan. I'm clever. I like sort of interesting bands. So... that's what I think. I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think so. It's like when you go to when I go to a gym and if I wear a Morrissey t-shirt to the gym, every single time someone will say come up to me and say something, just like I will if I see somebody doing the same. So it's something special there, unlike many other t-shirts with, you know, music t-shirts. It is quite special, and I suppose, like you say, people. I mean, I think you may be looking into it a bit in too much detail.
Mm.
But I do think that people, especially like Harry Styles, they're probably polished off to a T. Every aspect, every hair is polished. So they that's probably somewhere they've got some more freedom.
I mean, I remember being at university and seeing someone with a Smiths t-shirt. And I said to my friend Grace, I'm going to go over and say to them, I really like your t-shirt. And she said, George, just because he's wearing a t-shirt doesn't mean you should go and talk to him, you know. But what I wanted to say was, no, this is the Smiths. This is how the Smiths and Morrissey fandom works.
Yes, yeah.
You have to encourage each other and say, I think it's really cool you're wearing this t-shirt, in a way that maybe isn't the case for Enter Shikari or Lady Gaga. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something a little bit different about that fandom.
And I've never been up to, gone up to somebody in that situation and they've not wanted to talk about it. And I think they don't... I don't think Morrissey or the Smiths t-shirts have become too much of a fashion thing. People wear it because it means something. And I think that's the big difference, because although the Ramones are a great band, their logo has almost become a fashion design now. And people, you know, see 7-year-old girls wear them who obviously don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and they sell them in Primark.
A lot in Primark.
Although, if they sold Morrissey in Primark, I would buy Morrissey t-shirts in Primark, so, you know.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to keep up to date with all the latest Morrissey and Smiths news, there's several different ways, all of which we run. That's a coincidence, isn't it? So we've got the fanzine. The fanzine comes out once a month. It's called the Morrissey Mercury. You can Google that and find us on Twitter or X. I mean, it's Twitter. You can subscribe to that. It's totally free. We've got a WhatsApp group. It's actually a WhatsApp community, so you can't see anyone else's number. All you get is notifications every time something big happens in the world of the Smiths or Morrissey. So we send out a weekly digest of news, and we also give you like breaking news updates. So like when Morrissey got his new manager, or when he posted his website, you'll get notifications of that. We're also on Instagram. We really like to build up the Instagram page. We've got some really, I mean, I'm 30, like this is embarrassing, but we've got some really cool memes from someone who's much younger than I am, who's very good at making memes. We're putting them on there. And on Twitter, as I think I might have said earlier, we've just hit 1,000 followers. Twitter is like the main place to get the snippets of news. So you can follow us there. That's at Morrissey Merck. And next we're going to go into Nanny Val Reacts. And that's my grandma, Val. We'll see what she has to say. Thank you for doing Nanny Val Reacts. That's what we're calling it, Nan. Nanny Val Reacts.
Okay.
I sent you Hold On To Your Friends, which is a single off the album Voxel and I by Morrissey, obviously. I guess it was the first time that you'd ever listened to it. Is that right?
Yes, that particular one. I mean, over the years, I've heard others because you've been a fan for so since you were a baby almost.
Because I think you probably wouldn't really be aware of Morrissey or the Smiths if it wasn't for me going on about them all the time. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true.
So what kind of impression do you have of Morrissey and the Smiths, you know, from things I've talked about and before you listen to this song? What's your kind of impression of him and the music?
Well, obviously, it's been quite a few years now. When you were a teenager, I remember buying you a book for, you know, part of your birthday or Christmas present. And Dad saw it, and it was, I think it was called Please. It was short stories that people had done using Morrissey's or Smith's song titles.
Yeah.
And Dad was very disapproving. Your dad was very disapproving. And I had no idea why. I thought, you know, it's just a group. And he said, oh my God, that's wrist-slitting music. Yeah. Don't encourage it. Don't encourage him to listen to that. Anyway, I thought in my youth it was Elvis and he was supposed to be the devil incarnate according to all our parents. So I persevered and I gave you the book. And over the years, I think I've been quite supportive of you in your
obsession,
your love of Morrissey. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, this wrist-slitting music thing, this does come up a lot. And then sometimes people will say, well, actually, he's very funny. You know, he says funny stuff in his songs and it's not all miserable. So listening to this particular song, Hold On To Your Friends, what did you make of it? What was the impression that it gave you?
It's sort of quite a long introduction. And I thought it's going to be an instrumental for someone. I don't know. And it carried on. And I thought, Probably the bit I related to the most was, because his songs are quite, if you listen to the words, and I have done on occasions with you, they are sort of quite meaningful, you know, quite intense. And it was the bit about You only call me when you're feeling depressed.
Mm-hmm.
When you feel happy, I'm so far from your mind. My patience is stretched, my loyalty vexed. And that resonated with me because when I was first, for the first time in my life, living alone, I was very dependent on other people calling me or popping in or whatever, which was rare. And I felt like that at one occasion. I kept thinking, it's true, people do call me when there's something they're in really low in their life. And I was a little bit peeved, I suppose, about it. I think I told you at the time, I suddenly seen a little verse and I thought, And this came to mind yesterday and it said, don't feel bad if people remember you only when they need you. Feel privileged that you're a candle that comes to their mind when there is darkness. And that sort of was nice for me. And I thought, I think that's true, actually. I do seem to, when people ring me, I seem to be able to lift their mood or whatever. So, yeah, I think listening to that yesterday quite reminded me of that era in my life, which I'm not in now, but I was.
And that's interesting because you've presented that a more positive way of looking at the same thing that Morrissey was talking about. Yeah, he's saying basically it pees me off that people only call me when they're depressed. And you're saying, well, that can be a good thing, that can be a nice thing.
Yeah, you can turn it around, which, but I think initially I felt if I'd have listened to his song at that moment in time, it would have probably taken me further down that route and thinking, yeah, it's true. Yeah. People only call me when they need me, otherwise they don't give a monkey's.
I mean,
Which is
there's
not
another
true.
line in that song where he says, there just might come a time when you need some friends. Does that have any resonance for you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, everyone needs friends, but it's knowing the right people to turn to for the solutions to that particular problem, whatever it is at the time, But I've always been quite lucky. I think I've always had not many friends, but very good friends, people I can rely on to lift my mood or, just yap when I need to yap, whatever,
So there's another bit in the song when he talks about, he says, resist or move on, be mad, be rash, smoke and explode, sell all your clothes, just bear in mind you might need some friends. So there's this idea that you can forsake all other parts of your life, but what you really need at the end of the day is friends. You know, what do you think of the importance of friends? And do you think it's okay to blow up the rest of your life as long as you've got some mates, or is that too far?
To what? To blow up the. What did you say? Sorry.
To blow up the rest of your life, you know, quit your job, spend all your
Yeah,
money.
that's rather extreme. I don't think I've ever quite been in that position. I've gone through periods when people I know have been very low and been almost at that point, I imagine. I don't think luckily I have. I think I've been pretty fortunate, mainly because of family, probably more than friends. We've always had a close-knit family, which is good,
And so, do you think, having listened to this song, you might listen to some more songs? Maybe next time I can send you another Morrissey one and you can give me your take.
Yes, yeah, and funny enough, I did, and I've sort of, because he's always been very controversial, and I thought I need to know a little bit more, and see what I think about this. And I've looked at a couple of old interviews and that, and he does have a very gentle side to his nature, as well as being this, highly politicized sort of person, and extreme. He's also quite, he can be quite soft. I saw, for example, with an old interview with Jonathan Ross. And I think with his silliness, Jonathan Ross won him over. I think at first I felt Morrissey really didn't like him, but he was like having quite, smiling at the end, and I think he sort of won him over a bit, with his nonsense.
That was a really good interview, yeah, because I felt like Jonathan Ross sort of brought out his silly side, didn't he? And they were laughing.
And what was another one? I did see another one. Oh, Larry King one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at,
That's the one when he says, "I'm not glitzy, I'm not glamorous," and his jewelry is jangling underneath.
Yes, God, he looked like, he looked like he was the guy from the A Team.
Mr. T.
Yeah, he had so many necklaces around his neck. I thought, my God. Yeah, but the sound people were going crazy if it was clanking against against the microphones.
Well, that's brilliant. I'm not going to hold you any longer because I know we only said we'd do it for 5 or 10 minutes, but it's been really interesting to hear your thoughts on the track. And thank you, Nan.
Okay, my darling. Bye.
So that was my grandma, Nanny Val, as she's known in our family. I just thought it would be nice to hear the perspective of someone who's a little bit older. I mean, she's in her 80s. She doesn't love Morrissey. She doesn't even know much about him. She only really knows about him because I talk about him endlessly. So I thought that would be nice, and maybe we'll have her back next time. For now, we're going to go into a little bit of how close we've ever got to Morrissey. I mean, I've got kind of close, not even, maybe 40% close. Chris has got a little bit closer, so maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, not too close. I haven't followed him into toilets.
Unlike
But
someone we know.
well, yes, maybe. But when in Killarney, I was lucky enough to get there early, and Killarney was a beautiful place. Listening to the sound check, which was amazing. This was the start of a new tour, so new songs including Kerouac's Crack, which he didn't actually play, but it was great to hear it in that moment.
You heard it in the sound
Yeah,
check,
in the sound check,
but you didn't hear it
yeah.
live.
No.
Oh,
So I
wow.
think that was a test. Then the big door opened and Morrissey zoomed out in an old Mercedes, which was pretty cool.
So does he have this Mercedes like flown around with
No,
him?
from what I understand, it was a hire car.
Okay. Takes the sheen off it a little bit.
But a cool hire car.
Yeah.
And then I suppose I mean, when I think about being intimate and being close to Morrissey, we mentioned earlier the show in Barcelona, but the recent European tour, so in Brussels and Antwerp, the stages were about sort of shin high, not even knee high, and that was so special and intimate, such a special. My first time in Brussels, in Antwerp,
So
and very intimate.
was there like a barrier or anything?
No, nothing. So
So you're just kind of almost at eye level.
So very different to some of the UK shows where there's a big barrier, there's 10 miles in between me and Morrissey, but in these were very intimate and very special. How about you, George?
Well, before I talk, you mentioned Antwerp. Isn't Antwerp where you got the whole t-shirt?
Yeah, so that was quite lucky. So he sort of stepped forward, put the t-shirt out, chucked it slightly, but not really, and I sort of grabbed it and put it straight in down my pants, because I didn't want it to be ripped into a thousand pieces, into smithereens,
As it always
as it
is.
always often is. And then I noticed that some people behind me sort of noticed it and were looking for it. So I then sort of looked to the side as if to de as a decoy, and then they looked a different direction. I didn't want to get ripped apart, so yeah.
And so you once gave me a snippet of Morris's t-shirt that you caught at another gig, and I am not. No, in fact, I am ashamed to admit that I smelt it and it smelt beautiful. Did you give a little sniff to the Morrissey t-shirt when
I'm
you
not
put
really a sniffer.
Oh,
No,
come
I
on.
don't think so. Most people are, but yeah.
So you've never smelt it.
I might have smelt it.
I have never smelt you. It's a
Yeah.
Nighty Night reference. Okay, all right.
So you, George.
Yeah, me. As I said before, I never really queue. I prefer to just go in few minutes before the gig starts and enjoy it from the
You're too
back.
cool to queue, aren't you, really?
Too cool. I'm too
Yeah.
no I'm not I'm definitely not too cool. I'm just really lazy, and I think the people who queue put in a lot of effort, and it's hard, and I respect it, but I just haven't got it in me. But no, the closest I've ever got was when me and you went to Lyon in France, and we saw Morrissey, and I was just amazed by how impressive he looked. He was wearing this like brown muted suit with like an open collar shirt, and I shouted out, "You look fucking fabulous, Morrissey," because I was a bit drunk, and he said back, "Thank you," and the fact that Morrissey had said thank you is something that I had said, and I turned to you and said, "Did Morrissey just say thank you to me?" You're like, "Yes, he did." And then 5 minutes later, "Did Morrissey talk to me?" And you said, "If you mention it again, I'm gonna slap you in the face." But to have that little connection with Morrissey To be fair, he looked kind of pissed off that I had said it. He didn't look very impressed, but he said thank you.
Yeah, he said thank you, and that's what matters.
That's all that matters. A good English-mannered, well-mannered guy, yeah. So next, that's a little bit about how close we got to Morrissey. We're going to dissect the lyrics of some of Morrissey's more recent songs. We're going to look at I Am Veronica, Oblivion, and a slightly older one, Piccadilly Pilori.
I really love this song. When I first listened to it was on the coach from LA to SLO, to the show on that tour. It was a 4-hour bus ride on the 101. And I played the song constantly, repeated the song on YouTube from the Phoenix show that had happened. Yeah. So that when it just come out. So it's really special to me. But George, what does it mean to you?
Well, so I heard a really interesting theory, which I think you told me first, which you'd heard from some other friends who are also fans. So when Morrissey talks about the game I play is older than America,
yeah,
it seems like he's talking about prostitution. Yeah, Veronica is a prostitute, and the game that she plays is prostitution, selling her body, which is, of course, older than America.
The first ever profession.
Yeah, some say the oldest profession, yeah. And I think, so this song to me is about a woman who is trying to make her way. She's obviously a woman of interest, or Morrissey wouldn't be writing this song about her. You know, she is exciting. She has got an exuberant personality. And she sells her body, you know, for sex. He talks about a tiny spot allocated to each of us, which I think is this common kind of idea of Morrissey's. It also comes up in what kind of people live in these houses. This idea of property, you know, if you own a house in a street, you are tied to that house, and that is your tiny spot. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, those actually are probably my favourite lyrics in the song. I struggle to put meanings to a full song sometimes, but some of the really powerful lyrics from Morrissey and these other songs that have these same connotations for me, which is around there's a tiny spot allocated to each of us. So why should each day be the same? It's almost like a calling to go out there, do something, do whatever you want to do, or have some adventure or excitement, you know, rather than just live every day mundanely. And it almost frees me and allows me to do that because someone like Morrissey, who I admire so much, is saying do it. It opens the door for me to do that.
Like when he used to have that banner behind him on stage where it says, what was it?
What would you do if you weren't afraid?
Yeah, that idea. Mm. Like he's trying to rescue you
from... I Dare You, which was a recent one.
Yeah.
He
is dismissive of people who live in tiny houses and whatever, but he's also saying, if you want to live a more exciting life, you can, you know?
Yeah.
So also in this song, he's got this idea of a last chance. This could be your last chance. This could be your very last go. I think that's a very common Morrissey theme of like, what I'm saying to you now, this is your last chance. If you don't take this, you're going to live a life of normality for the rest of your life and nothing's going to happen. What other songs does that bring to mind? Can you think of other ones? I should have written it down, but I think it is common in Morrissey songs to sort of suggest that if you don't do it now, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And he also, in terms of the prostitution theme, he's got that line about slide me into your pocket now. And it might be a stretch, maybe it is too much of a stretch, but when I went to Las Vegas, I saw a lot of kind of street sellers with calling cards for hookers, and they were flicking them, making that sound, flicking them so it gets your attention. And I sort of thought, well, maybe if Veronica is a hooker, maybe she wants you to slide her business card into your pocket, you know? But I think you suggested maybe...
No, maybe you know that you are a man of the world, George, unlike me. So you've been
to Las Vegas.
I've been to Las Vegas, but I spent most of the time in the bath.
Yeah.
I think I gambled $5, lost, and that was my gambling career over. Okay.
There's also the top bell, isn't there?
Yes.
Press your finger on the top bell, which I think, to me, is like an intercom. You know, this prostitute lives in a flat in a building. You have to press your finger on the top bell on the intercom to get through to her. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, it could be that. So next we're going to move on to I Live in Oblivion. We'll listen to that now.
Okay. I apologize, I grow old. I apologize, I grew old.
I Live in Oblivion. What does this song mean to you, George?
Well, I think, again, as all Morrissey songs are, it's so interesting, this idea of oblivion. So there's a Philip Larkin poem called Once, which talks about oblivion. Now, Philip Larkin became pretty much an alcoholic at the end of his life, and also a bit of a Nazi, which people don't talk about very much. Yeah. His reputation has been whitewashed. But that may have been because he was such an alcoholic and he had a partner who was into all that stuff and whatever. But anyway, there's this poem which I wanted to quote a couple of lines of. So it's called Once by Philip Larkin. It goes, beyond all this, the wish to be alone, however the sky grows dark with invitation cards, however we follow the printed directions of sex, however the family is photographed under the flagstaff, beyond all this, the wish to be alone. And he ends it with, beneath it all, the desire for oblivion runs.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I think that there have been rumours that Morrissey might drink a little bit more than maybe he should. And running through all alcoholics is this theme of just wanting to be obliviated, you know, to just not feel things anymore. And I think that is something to do with what Morrissey's talking about in this song. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, on that, how are you finding the wine today?
Oh, it's lovely. oblivion. Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah, this song to me also has the feel of later life, some dementia. You know, I can't help but feel because of the references to the hospital food.
Yeah.
My grandma, you'll be talking about your grandma enough today. We both love our grandmas.
Yeah.
She recently had a new shoulder, and she came out of the hospital raving about the food. She couldn't believe they had a menu.
Really.
And she's someone who, whenever we take the food, she's always moaning. So. Yeah. So, what do you think about that side, that it could be related to that?
I think there's a interesting... Oh, I've said interesting so much, but you can't help it. I mean, he is bloody interesting. But this idea of being infantilized, he's infantilizing himself. You know, he's saying, there's a good boy. You know, the only thing that can kill me is the hospital food. Just shove it down. Like, you're right. There's this dementia, Alzheimer's kind of feeling. Mm. He's talking... He's probably, when he wrote it, he was talking about a relative. But it seems to me that he's talking about himself at the end of his life, how he will just become this little boy who needs to be fed and given medicine. And somehow he makes that interesting and sexy, doesn't he?
Definitely.
Well, sexy is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? It's exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, this would be a great one for the old people's home DJ. And that's what you call callback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so also he talks about, the only one who's left to visit me is you. And I think that is a key bit of the Morrissey lore, that there is this one person in his life who always comes back, you know, all the way from Come Back to Camden to this song. There's, in Morrissey's mind, it seems, and even Browed by Beloved, you know, the same person that he goes back to every time, there's one person in his life that is the one for him, but he never seems to get him or her, you know, him or her, who knows? You know, you might sway one way or the other, but yeah. The only one that's left to visit me is you. I mean, what do you think that means?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. But I do get the relevance to Brow of My Beloved and that one, Come Back to Camden, and that relation to the other person.
Okay, so we're going to go into the next song. What have we got next? Piccadilly Pilare?
Piccadilly Pilare, yes.
Okay. So
listen to that now.
Yeah.
Off the rails I was and off the rails I was happy to stay. What's a reasonably good boy? Oh, a reasonable rock. And the Piccadilly Pilare was just silly shine between me and the boys. My dad.
Might I say, George, it's always so bona to Varda you.
Oh, thank you. You love me, Raya.
Piccadilly Pilare, George.
Okay. So it's obviously, everyone knows this, I think. It's a song about a male prostitute in London. You have these themes of Pilare, which you may or may not know, is a secret gay language which has its origins in the theatre, the gypsy and the homosexual world, especially from a time when it was illegal to be gay. So you had to be able to have conversations with other gay men without, you know, the next table picking up that you're actually breaking the law and, you know, you should be punished. What do you think of the song, Chris?
Yeah, so on the Pilare side, another one of our heroes, Kenneth Williams,
yes.
did quite some interesting. Always famous for Pilare, he had an Acid Drops a book, which almost teaches you Pilare words, which is a great read. I think also weirdly that we've picked this song because we did I Am Veronica, and this song has an ancient trade, which.
Yeah, the prostitution
thing. Side. So yeah, maybe that says more about us than Morrissey, because there's a lot of songs we could have chosen from. So yeah, that I think we were thinking about that. The other thing about this song that really was really powerful to me when I first listened to it, maybe when I was 18, 19, when I was getting ready to go out, was the no dad, I won't be home tomorrow. Or
yes.
You know, the sort of I'm going to go out and do what I need to do, and you give very little information to your parents, so that side of it.
I mean, that, yes. So there's this, no dad, I won't be home tomorrow. And there's also the line of good sons like you,
yes,
you never
yep.
understand. This idea that if you are this kind of person, your dad and good, you know, friends of yours who are good sons won't understand the life that you want to embark on, which is maybe slightly sexier, slightly more outsider lifestyle.
Mm.
In this song, he seems to be saying, you know, yes, I understand that I've chosen this life, maybe a little bit like Alma Matters, you know, it's my life to wreck my own way,
yeah.
And you won't understand it.
Yeah.
So there's also this idea of having a gang, isn't there? He says, you know, me and the boys in my gang.
Around the centre of town.
Around the centre of town. Yeah. This comes up all the time, doesn't it? Obviously, most notably in First of the Gang to Die.
Mm.
But Morrissey always wants to be in a gang, doesn't he? Whether it's his band or a fictional gang. Why do you think that's so important to Morrissey?
I think Morrissey's obviously always said and has always been very passionate about the people that play with him in the band. I think he said on a few times around the, you know, it's not just session musicians, it's a group of people, a gang that are really close. And obviously that, you know, a lot of those people would write the songs, write the music and help do that. And accredited on the albums, which is very different to just getting session musicians in.
I think also, if you are an outsider, if you are a little bit weird and you're not coming from the same place as most people, you are entering this industry that's all about being popular and singing cool songs and being cool. You need a gang surrounding you to protect you from all that stuff, I think. And you need a bit of a buffer to the outside world. I think maybe that's why Morrissey finds the idea of a gang so appealing, because it protects him from some of the harsher elements of the rest of the world. I don't know if you... Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Piccadilly Pilare. What are we going on to next, Chris?
So I suppose from there, we want to invite people to bring in songs, so we're not just talking about songs about prostitution. So other songs are out there. So if you've got some songs, please send them to us. Can you remind us the email, George?
Yeah. So it's themorrisseymercury@gmail.com. That's the email address for the fanzine. We're using that for now. So you can also send us a tweet at Morrissey Merc. You can send us an Instagram message at the Morrissey Mercury. If you are in our WhatsApp channel, you can text me directly. So let us know what songs you want us to dissect.
And also, if you have any comments as well about what you think, that would be helpful to us and interesting for us to read. Next, we're going on to George is going to interview Julie Hamill. She's the founder of Moz Army, the Moz Army Meets in Manchester.
Yeah, she's got some big news for us, so let's see what she has to say.
We're with Julie Hamill, who is the founder of the Moz Army and the Moz Army Meets. I don't know, Julie, what is your title? Is it founder? Is it president of the Moz Army?
Yeah, president. Whatever you decide, founder is great, yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
The person who started it, yeah, with a bunch of other people on Twitter.
So let's start with that then. So when did the Moz Army first start?
Started in 2010, late 2009, 2010. I joined Twitter the year before. And I remember because Aidan Grimshaw was on The X Factor and he was singing Mad World, and he was singing it really well. And me and this other girl called Natalie Facienda, I think, although I've never asked her how you pronounce her name, but she's called Famous When Dead on Twitter. And we started chatting, saying, isn't he got, he's got this little kind of Morrissey vibe about him. And then we started chatting about just other people started joining in, Morrissey, Smiths, lyrics, songs, you know, what do you like? What album do you like? And it kind of grew organically. And I said at the time, why don't we use the hashtag Moz Army and see if we can pick up a few other people and build, wasn't really an intention to build a community. It was just build a big sort of chat fest kind of thing as Twitter was then. And within 3 weeks, it was all over the world. It was in LA, it was in Sydney, it was in Japan, in Tokyo, it was in, it was in Amsterdam. There was, we just couldn't believe it. And people just kept using the hashtag to talk about this great topic. And we ended up sort of a couple of years in, maybe 2012, I think Denise or Stefan or somebody said, we really should all meet, you know, we've got to all meet, like we've been talking for a couple of years now, we really should all meet. And so I nominate Julie to organize it and meet. And I was like, oh, where do you want to meet? And then we said, okay, we'll all meet up at the Star and Garter so that we could go to the Friday disco that some people hadn't been to. And then all of a sudden flights were getting booked and, you know, stuff was happening, and I thought, well, we can't just come all this way just for a disco. We better have something else as well. And then over the years, it just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew until last year, it was Stephen Street. It's like nuts.
So someone who's never been to Moz Army Meet before, what can they expect? What goes down?
People from all over the world who love the music of the Smiths and Morrissey coming together to basically go in a room, shut the doors and dance and enjoy themselves, leaving all disagreements, all politics, all issues, all everything at the door, and coming into a very inclusive community which covers every single age group. You've got fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, you've got grandsons, granddaughters. You know, we've had babies in it, babies born into it, we've had dogs named after it. It's one of those things that it's, you know, and loads of cats, and it's where it's just an organic growth of an inclusive community that seems to keep attracting good people, nice people, people that don't want to fight, people, you know, all the lovers, not the fighters, people that want to come in and go, well, you know, I don't actually have the Japanese import of gene, but I really like Panic, and you know, everyone's like, that's fine, yeah, come on, you know, it's fine. And people who seen year after year, people who turn up on their own, they have, you know, who've been, takes them years to build up the courage to come. And that's how the Twitter anonymity of Twitter really helps, and Facebook as well, because someone will say, I'm a bit shy, should I come? And everyone piles on, you know, come, I'll look after you. This is my name, DM me, You know, because that's what we want, and that's how it's grown, and that's why it's become such a gorgeous community.
And you've been doing, so this year coming up, it's on May, what's the date of this year's meet? May the
17th and 18th of May.
This will be your 11th year, is that right?
Yeah, 11th year, yeah.
And I understand you have some pretty sizable news to share with us.
Well, last year was 10 years and it was a really beautiful year. As I said, you know, Stephen Street came, Andrew Parassi was there. They replayed together for the first time since they had been in the recording studio 35 years ago. It was kind of history was being made in the room. It was beautiful. And I just, for me, I've got a lot of other projects, writing projects on now that take up a lot of my time. And with the booking of the bands, the guests, the interviewing, the logistics of it, the lights, the sound engineer, the, you know, the you name it, everything, the promotion, the posters, the tickets, it becomes quite a big exercise, becomes quite a big operation. And fortunately, it's good in a way that I have now got another book to deliver. And, you know, I've got to write my fifth book. I've got other, you know, I've got a column now, and I've got loads of other things, events and things like that. And the Moz Army still takes up a massive amount of time. So I'm putting myself into retirement after this one. And I basically was going to stop after 10 years, but then Andy died, and that really hit me hard, being a fan since I was, you know, seeing the Smiths when I was 13, and Andy's been a big, big part of my life. And I noticed it hit a lot of people hard as well. And I sort of waited, and there was an outpouring of grief, and did some radio interviews and everything like that. And waited and waited and waited. And this grief was still coming out on across all social media. But at the same time, I thought, no one's doing anything. There needs to be something to sort of mark his significance in history and his contribution.
And I think it's important for me to say, because you might not say it yourself, Julie, you do all of this, you don't take a fee, you don't make anything personally from the Moz Army meets, and you put so much work into it every year. I don't blame you for wanting to take a rest, but I think people will be asking, does this mean it's the end of Moz Army and that there'll be no more events?
I don't know at the moment. This year, it's certainly going to be my last one, whether it's the last one, we'll see. But I can tell you that because it is my last one, I have opened my address book and contacted absolutely everybody who has either contributed as a guest or not contributed, that has been a wished for guest over the years, and told them it's my last one, and they've said, okay, I'll come then. So there's people coming that are, you know, really close to, really significant in the life of Andy Rourke, very close to him, are going to be sharing stories about working with him, knowing him. Andy's two brothers are going to be there, and the rest of Andy's family are going to be there, and a lot of sort of Manchester's finest are going to be there, some of which I can't say who, because they don't want me to, but it's going to be a case of you're there to see it, or you're not there. You were there or you weren't there. Be like the Sex Pistols.
And if you know, if anyone's listening to this and they haven't been to Moz Army Meet before, you know, I would really encourage you to go, because it's a really friendly environment. You learn stuff from the people speaking and performing that you didn't know about Morrissey and the Smiths. You'll make friends, and we'll obviously share a link to where you can buy the tickets. Is it what's the ticket provider, Julie, where people can buy the tickets?
WeGotTickets.com/AllAboutAndy. That's what we're calling it this year, All About Andy. So it's going to be all about Andy Rourke. He will be the central focus, and it will be his work with the Smiths, obviously, his work with Morrissey, his work with Sinead O'Connor, Kirsty MacColl, Sandy Shaw. All of that is going to be looked at and investigated. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of people who have worked with him. We've got two bands performing. We've got the Smiths United from Lincoln, and then we've also got Rourke, which is a band that I put together, starting with Andrew Parisi, who played with Andy Rourke on November Spawn the Monster, and Yes, I'm Blind, and various other things. So Andrew, who's been a vital part of the Moz Army, he was there in the very first one. We live around the corner from each other, so we, I was like, Andrew. He'll be there. And then also a couple of the Salford lads who were there last year, Ezra, who's a phenomenal bass player, he's unbelievable. He's classically trained. He won't want me to say this, but he turned down a place in the Fame Academy, LaGuardia High School in New York, Ben, how good he is. And also he knew Andy really well because his band toured with Spectre when Andy was in Spectre with Mike Joyce. They did a tour of the East Coast of America. And with Ezra will be Justin, who's a guitarist in the Salford Lads and also was in the band that supported Spectre. They were called Sadie. And then John, who's the other guitarist. So they're all like massive enthusiasts, but they're leaving their tribute band, which is inactive anyway, and joining Andrew Parisi. And then we're going to have a series of singers this year. We're going to have an increased female presence, which I'm really pleased about. We've got Keely, who is just taking the music world by storm and recently supported Alan White. We've got Jen, who's a singer in Priscilla's, who have been going for 20 years, who are like this kind of female sort of Cramps, cool, you know, you've got to see the Priscilla's if you haven't. Then there's going to be interviews. There will, of course, be the raffle. And we will be remembering not just Andy, but also remembering Ian Garner, who we lost last year, a couple of days after Andy. He died on Morrissey's birthday, ironically. It's all weird. He was obviously the doorman at the Star and Garter, who greeted everybody over the years, certainly over every single year that we had the Moz Army there and all the discos and the monthly disco. So we're going to be remembering him, and there's absolutely loads. I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all in, but the two bands will be great. But the most important part of it really is, and always has been, the people who go, because it is the most beautiful, joyous atmosphere. It's like a wedding, you know, everybody's either marrying Morrissey or marrying the Smiths or marrying the music, or it's just a big loving, and there's no bad mood, there's no oddness anywhere. Everyone's dancing with nobody but also dancing with everybody, and it's just a beautiful thing to see, because I think that's kind of rare, because people, and ironically, it started on Twitter, and Twitter is now a place where people love to go for a good row, whereas it's just, you know, people like Denise, Stefan, Eva, over the years, the crew from Los Angeles, Jose, everybody who comes over are all still friends and have maintained, you know, you and I have been friends a long time, George, yeah. And Chris as well, you know, since when, 2013?
I think it was the first meet. Hop Farm when we first met.
So Hop Farm, so that's 2011. Yeah. Wow. Now I feel old.
I remember you were kind of rounding people up to talk to each other, and that was the very sort of seeds of Moz Army, I think. Yeah. And that awful coach ride from London to Kent. Ugh, it was horrible.
Oh yeah, that bus. Yeah, the coach. Yeah, yeah. Was that the coach we saw Amy Winehouse? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah. We looked out the window and Amy was walking down the back of King's Cross.
Well, yeah. I don't remember that. That's amazing.
I don't know. You're probably all.
Yeah. Probably was. So Judy, thank you for talking to us. Thank you, you know, from the Moz Army for running these events for so long. And, you know, we do really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on, and it's been really good to talk to you.
Thanks, George.
So that was Julie Hamill. As we promised, fairly big news. She's stepping down from running the Moz Army meets, which is a massive undertaking, and we don't blame her in the slightest for wanting to take a break. Who knows what's going to happen to the Moz Army meets in the future. In the meantime, I just want to put it on the record that you know, I and many other fans really appreciate all the work that she has put in to run these events. You know, this idea that you can go to this place and you'll feel welcomed and you'll feel like you belong. I know, Chris, you said your first meeting was particularly special.
Yeah, I think going somewhere where your music is, and often when going out, most clubs, bars, you know, don't play Morrissey and the Smiths all night, so it's quite special for that reason. But also the people there are very welcoming, especially when I was quite younger. And there's a really big mix of ages that go there as well. It's not just older people, younger people. It's everyone in between, sharing passion.
Yeah, it is. It's honestly a wonderful event. And if you're sat there thinking, well, I don't know anyone, don't know if I should go on my own, go on your own, because you will meet people. If you just stand in the corner, well, that's the most Smiths thing you can do. So don't worry about it. Julie did forget to mention a couple of people. So DJ Hannah, who's known as Rusty Spanner on socials, she'll be doing some of the DJing, as well as DJs Loud and Clear.
DJ Hannah recently did the Smiths Disco, yeah, at the Strong Agata, and did a great job, so I'm really, really glad she's on board and involved.
Yeah, she's brilliant. And that wraps it up for this episode of the Morrissey and Wine podcast. Thank you for listening. The whole point of this is just to kind of elevate the conversation about Morrissey and the Smiths. You know, there's so much clickbaity, tabloid reporting of this subject, and we just want to elevate it a bit, talk about things in detail, and just kind of have a proper conversation around the subject. So if you've enjoyed this, please subscribe. Please tell like one person about it, even if it's your grandma. I mean, just tell someone. Thank you for listening. Anything you want to say, Chris?
No, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Well, short and sweet. Okay, see you next month. So just before we finish, just to say, we did use some YouTube videos when we were talking about the Morrissey songs and dissecting the lyrics. The first one, I Am Veronica, came from the YouTube channel From the Archives. I Live in Oblivion was from Baby J, and Piccadilly Polari was from Johnny Burns. That's Burns with a Z. So definitely check out those channels. Some excellent bootlegs on there. I think you'll really enjoy. See you next month.